tell you.
This is Digital Dave.
And I'm Fast Eddie. I'm sorry.
Yep, he's lost it. And joining us is John Blevins and Judd Freeling. Is I pronounce that correct?
That's correct.
Anywhere?
Yes.
From NASA.
NASA!
We love NASA.
We do.
And we're going to talk about flight lessons for rocket launching. This doesn't make sense. I thought it was rockets literally point and shoot.
No, apparently I'm wrong.
You
still got to control it, right? And you got to have the people on board have similar skills to what you do when you're piloting.
Oh, okay. This is manned flight.
Yes.
I didn't make that connection. I thought maybe like I've never seen a guy at a SpaceX launch with a little radio control box trying to fly the rocket.
You know, there's some days that might be an improvement.
So the mechanisms are different, but the control is the same. Rail, pitch, yaw. And go fast.
Go faster.
Yeah, really fast. You guys don't give them a throttle, though, do you? Not really.
We do throttle. Yeah, we do throttle a little bit. Yeah, actually, in fact, we throttle back is the real thing, right?
Right. When you hit max Q.
Max Q is one of the areas throttle back.
Okay.
Sometimes we throttle back when we let the boosters go.
Yeah, okay.
And then we throttle back at the end of flight because at that point, the machine is lighter and the Gs are very high.
Oh, that's nice. How many Gs you routinely pull on a manned launch?
Well, we try to do 3.1 is kind of our target, to be precise, and we throttle back to maintain that at the end of flight.
Okay. Yeah.
And then when we re-enter, it depends on our entry trajectory, but anywhere from 4 to 6 Gs.
And how long does that last?
Not too long, like on entry.
Yeah.
Probably 10 seconds maybe at the most.
Okay, because I was going to say 4 to 6 Gs, that's 1 second is an eternity.
Yeah.
Well, it's not the Gs that you're thinking about, though. Our Gs are basically along the axis of the eyeball.
They're not through your head,
so they're through your chest.
So
you don't have the blackout like you might have in a jet.
No, you just have the elephant sitting on you feeling.
Exactly. Yes. That's exactly what it is. You can't move your arms well, but other than
right.
that.
Right. Yep. Don't try and sneeze.
Add that to the training program.
Right.
Now we want you to sneeze.
Yep.
Wow. So how many hours of flight training do pilots typically get? Well, aren't most astronauts already pilots?
Not all of them, but we do have a fair amount of astronauts that come from the military.
Right.
Also general aviation, but we do tons of training, though, before they fly to make sure they're ready for all their missions.
Okay. And you have a flight simulator. Do you put them in a centrifuge and do an unusual attitude and tumble them and all that stuff,
no,
too?
No, we don't do that anymore.
Ah, what fun is that?
Yeah.
Darn.
I'm sorry, but that makes me think of the scene in Space Cowboys with Clint Eastwood and Tommy Lee Jones in the centrifuge.
Now, how many have memorized the eye chart? That's what I want to know.
Well, it sounds very interesting, but... You know, the question is, when do they actually get to fly the rocket? I thought these things were on a computer-controlled trajectory most of the time.
Well, yeah, so for the first part of flight, John's absolutely right. You know, he and his team program the rocket to do what it needs to do. Now, we always have the option to get off the rocket, and so that's the human interaction. Either we can do it automatically if we got something set a limit, or they've got a button they can push and get off. But like what we did on Artemis 2, once we got off the upper stage, we actually re-rendezvoused with the upper stage, and we did a manual piling demo. So we basically tested the handling qualities of the Orion spacecraft, and so how it worked, you know, falling in concert with the upper stage. So it was really exciting. And if you saw it on the video, it was really a really fun time to watch.
It's funny when you say really exciting, really fun, because when you watch it, it takes them 37 minutes to move 1 foot, you know? Everything's so delicate and precise.
Well, but they're moving, you know, thousands and thousands of miles an
hour
relative to Earth.
You don't ever get that impression.
Yeah.
You know, everything's falling at the same speed, as you say.
The relative motion and everything is what you have to be careful of, because it would be difficult to fix a crash in space.
Oh, you just call Geico, they send out an estimator,
AAA comes up with a tow truck.
Yeah, with a tow truck,
They can just wait another year till we get the next launch vehicle ready.
So you guys, you have to have extensive simulators to practice all of this stuff, because they just don't do this cold.
Oh, no.
No. And yeah, we do. You're absolutely right. So we've got a simulator out at Houston, at Johnson Space Center, that we have the astronauts train a lot on how to do the Orion systems. They also hook that up to one of John's simulators, which is an SLS Space Launch System simulator, so that they can simulate the launch. But yeah, they've got tons of time simulating. I don't know, John, you...
You know, one of the things I think of for pilots and then the astronauts, and that's kind of the connection here, is thinking ahead of the machine.
Yep.
So, you know, you mentioned automation. Yes, there's so much automation. We could fly the whole mission pretty well automated. But, you know, the first time you get on a Ferris wheel ride or some ride, the zipper at the county fair, you can't think ahead of that machine. It's an exciting machine. We do not want it to be exciting. There's a lot of exciting things that happen. We're going from, as I say, zero kinetic energy to bat out of hell kinetic energy in 8 minutes. And they need to think ahead of that machine. They need to decide if they need that human interaction of the abort. They need to anticipate what's coming next. There are functions the crew does interacting. And so even though we can automate even that first flight, my space launch system machine as it's going, that training is super important to making sure we're a successful mission.
And I'd bet dollars to donuts that they never fly a perfect rocket. There are things breaking all the time.
Did he say my rocket breaks, Judd?
Yeah, I don't know. In the simulator.
They're calling slow-ish.
They break all the time in simulator.
They break and they do break.
They never work right. They never work right in simulator. Yeah. But I tell you, when we launched Artemis II, that rocket was right down the middle.
That rocket did perform perfect. But you are right that during the prep, a sensor will fail or something else. And we've got to decide, are we still good to go? Will the computer do what it's supposed to do? Will the crew understand the indications on the screen? So things will break, but we don't launch a rocket that we think will not perform well. I will say, and thank you, Jed, for that shout out, the Artemis II, the space launch system, was perfectly down the middle, probably the most accurate insertion in low Earth orbit of any machine we've ever sent.
So you guys are not only training for it, but you're working hard to prevent another Apollo 13.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I hope so.
100%.
Well, and the same thing that you're doing in flying, and you're thinking, what's the next worst failure? You know, where am I going to land if the engine shuts off? We do all that in training ahead of time because, as you guys said, there's no AAA to come take care of it. And quite frankly, you're really committed, right? Imagine flying just a single-engine airplane over the ocean. Well, we're doing it while we're accelerating the whole time, right? So what is velocity to an airplane is really acceleration to a rocket.
Right. I had a thought. It went right out of my head.
Darn
it. I hate when that happens.
How many hours, on average, do your crews get in the simulator?
Wow. So for Artemis II, we were doing at least two or three simulations a week. And each of those simulations were 8 hours, so I'm sure we were doing...
Go to the bathroom.
Yeah, right. So we were doing hundreds of hours of simulations before, you know, we actually stepped on the rocket and did it for real.
Okay, I remember my question. Flight's automated, especially during launch and ascent phases, but I'm assuming that they're following along a checklist and they're watching every single roll maneuver, this throttle, that pitch, this.
Yeah, and we actually have you know, calls that we are, they're kind of check-in calls, you know, and we tell them we've handed over to the next radio station or satellite. We tell them when they're getting into different abort boundaries, you know, whether they can make the end of the mission if they lose one engine, things like that. So yeah, we're checking in with them all the time.
Right, so they're not just along for the ride.
Nope.
All right. You said that Artemis II went perfectly. Did you have any glitches at all?
The coffee maker didn't work.
Artemis II Ascent went perfect.
Right.
And we always expect some things to go wrong, but we're just saying, yeah, we had a great machine coming uphill. That's that first 8 minutes. The mission obviously took over 9 days, and so there were a lot of things we learned about. And that was the point of doing the mission, is to learn that machine, to shake it out. Well, so there were a lot of things learned.
Yeah, I mean, when we were going uphill, we had it shook so much, one of the water valves on the water tank failed.
Oh,
so,
wow.
So
apparently your
Nutella
retention system failed at some point. You don't remember seeing the Nutella go floating by?
Yep, I do. That was pretty popular on the socials, right?
The Nutella probably loved it.
I was going to say, you know, a lot of things on this machine were untried. Have there been any older designs of systems, like, say, the bathroom, the toilet, that have been recycled from other space programs?
So the toilet was new, although we flew the toilet on the International Space Station to kind of test it out. And actually, we found some deficiencies in it and made some design changes on the toilet from our experience being in space on the International Space Station.
You know, if you could just get them not to have to go to the bathroom, things would be so much easier.
Yeah, yeah. So the toilet worked great, but it got clogged up, right? So the vent line got clogged up, and so we couldn't vent a lot of time, and so we had contingencies for that, obviously.
Obviously. I was going to say, here it is on the Artemis, the Crapper Mark II.
Oh, my goodness. That's the engineer that gets paid the most right there. Anyway, so when's the next launch, Artemis 3?
Middle of next year.
That's amazing. That's a fast cadence for you guys.
Yep.
Well, we're proud of what you've done, man. That was a great mission.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
You guys did a lot better than Blue Origin did, unfortunately.
Hey, everybody's allowed to fail.
Well, that's part of the process. I mean, early in NASA's history, Project Vanguard, they had nothing but trouble.
Yep.
Got to the point where the press started calling in, what was it, Kaputnik?
Yeah.
I mean, it was...
These guys don't remember that. All right, I want to thank you for joining us. We're speaking with John Blevins and Judd Frilling of NASA, and I'm Digital Dave.
And this is Fast Eddie.
And this is EAA Radio.